Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Free Bruce Podcast. Another edition coming right at you from CBSSports.com. I'm Brian Fisher, alongside the namesake, as always, Bruce Feldman, who was at the Game of the Century in Tuscaloosa, and quite an atmosphere from just about everybody you heard as well as saw on CBS last Saturday. Bruce, what was it like to be in Bryant-Denny last week?
You know, it was a loud, very intense atmosphere. You know, and I've talked to, you know, a lot of people who are connected with the game. John Chavis, a longtime defensive coordinator in the SEC, now at LSU, he said that was the most physical game he's ever been a part of. You know, so it's one thing for players to say, and obviously a lot of those guys have been in some big games in the SEC, but for a guy who's been around it for, you know, 20-plus years, that's really saying something. And I think, you know, there weren't the fireworks of a lot of scoring. Obviously, there weren't touchdowns, but there were some magnificent defensive plays. You saw Eric Reed make maybe the play of the season so far on that pick to really keep Alabama from scoring and really stop a big drive. And I thought that, you know, there were moments where Trent Richardson was really good, and then there was other moments where LSU was able to contain him. And I think it came back to LSU with just another great defensive effort, and LSU had a better, you know, has better special teams, and I thought that was the difference. And, you know, all the credit to Les Miles, because he finds a way to win a lot of these close games, and to go into Tuscaloosa on a Saturday night in that atmosphere, that was not going to be easy.
I think we can probably all agree that it maybe didn't live up to the hype of the Game of the Century, but a lot of people really knocked it because there was a lack of scoring. But, you know, for me, at least watching a lot of SEC football, the defensive moves, the interceptions, defensive line play, the front seven really being active, I thought that was almost elevated the game in a lot of people's minds. It might have, you know, taken away from it, but I thought defensively it was actually really fun to watch.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, I think you're talking about, you know, it was a riveting contest. Now, were there big, huge plays, you know, 50-yard pass plays and long runs and kickoff returns and the kind of things where you're talking about a shootout? No, it wasn't. I mean, you know, you go back to some of the games you've seen over the years where there's just fireworks left and right. I mean, this wasn't that. And I think it had the drama of, you know, sometimes a lot you get that. I know people have made the comparison to like a pitcher's duel, but I do think that there was something where every big play could have been a 5-yard loss in the backfield or whatever, because this was a game where it wasn't even teams moving between the 20s. It was basically teams moving in between the 30s. And there was just a physical, you know, hard-hitting brand of football. But I think you have to keep in the back of your mind, both of these offenses were averaging almost 40 points a game coming in, and they had played some really good teams. I mean, you look at the teams LSU has beaten. You know, you look at what Alabama's done. I mean, they destroyed a very good Arkansas team. They went into state college and pushed around a Penn State team that's only got one loss so far. And I think, you know, you're clearly looking at the teams with the two best defensive teams in the country. Now, the quarterback play, very shaky. I mean, there was no Kellen Moore or Andrew Luck out there. Jarrett Lee looked like the Jarrett Lee of a couple years ago. And those mistakes he made look like they were mistakes out of, you know, out of panicking. And just, I think, you know, that kind of defense that LSU has on one side and that kind of defense that Alabama brings at you on the other side, that's going to make a lot of good quarterbacks look pretty average.
You talked a little bit in your Sunday column, The Big Picture, about the rematch, and I think that's probably the topic du jour this week outside of, obviously, the Penn State issues. Alabama comes in at number 3 in the BCS standings. It looks like if Stanford wins this week, they will leapfrog them back into that third slot and move Alabama down. Are you feeling like this could actually happen? A rematch could end up happening down the road?
I do think there's a legitimate chance of it happening, because if somebody knocks off Oklahoma State, and let's say it's Oklahoma, and if Oregon knocks off Stanford, you're looking at the rest of the candidates out there, and what are you seeing? I don't see Oklahoma, even if they beat Oklahoma State, being able to make a better case than Alabama could. I mean, Alabama would have beaten more ranked teams. I mean, if you look at what Oklahoma's got on its schedule, you know, they went into Tallahassee and beat Florida State. Well, Florida State's not a ranked team. You know, you look at some of the other teams that they've beaten. Texas is clearly not where Texas was, previous years before last year. And then you look at the team that Oklahoma would have lost, Texas Tech, at home. I mean, Texas Tech may not even go to a bowl game this year. So I think that hurts them. I think people are going to look and say, well, what about the Oregon rematch? And I'm skeptical of that, too, just because, look, Oregon played LSU. It was nowhere near as close as the game that just went into overtime. And quite honestly, Oregon's played in a bunch of big games, and hasn't won any bowl, BCS bowl games. They've lost to Boise when they played them. I know it's not this past year, but I do think that is going to be in the minds of a lot of voters. And so it comes back to Boise, which doesn't have a very impressive schedule, which is quite honestly the competition they played is very lackluster, with really only about two games that they're going to play all year that I think people will even take seriously, and that's TCU and Georgia, or the Alabama rematch. And that's going to be tough for some people to stomach, but I think that's going to be an interesting decision for a lot of pollsters to decide how they go about it.
A lot of football still to be played, and I'm kind of circling the date at the end of the season, which will be on CBS on Friday. Arkansas travels to LSU. Arkansas went under the radar, obviously going up against the game of the century, but they took care of a top 10 team in South Carolina, maybe an overinflated ranking for South Carolina, but they took care of them, dispatched them fairly well, especially in pulling away in the fourth quarter. Does Arkansas have a chance to go into Baton Rouge and maybe pull an upset and throw everything into the loop?
Well, I give them a little chance because I think they do have the firepower. Bobby Petrino's a really good coach, and you never know what can happen in those settings. I mean, we've seen bigger upsets. I don't think this is like a 3-touchdown underdog. I mean, Tyler Wilson's a really good quarterback. In fact, he might be the best quarterback in the SEC, which, granted, may not be saying that much, but I still think that's a dangerous team. And you never know. If LSU can't get solid quarterback play, or they get some, they're turning it over again, Arkansas has got the firepower to give them a problem. I wouldn't pick LSU to lose the game, but it wouldn't completely shock me if Arkansas pulled the upset because, look, it's college football, and we seem to get the unexpected at all these turns. Just when you think you know the direction of things, it goes the other way.
Obviously, the story in college football, a lot of action on Saturday, but it was kind of pushed to the side and overshadowed by the news out of Happy Valley and what's going on at Penn State. I know you weighed in with a column on CBSSports.com, but quickly, how bad is this scandal? I mean, on the surface, it looks like one of the worst in college football history.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, there's got to be just a level of outrage here. And as I wrote, earlier in the week, you get back into this situation when there is the leadership at Penn State, and I put leadership in quotes, completely dropped the ball. And it's tragic to think that how many more children became victims around there because people at the top of the food chain just did the wrong thing. And this isn't about wins and losses or anything like that. It's about something a lot bigger. And it's anybody who reads the presentment or reads some of the accounts from the victims' mothers. I mean, it's a story that will get you very, very angry. And from the moment that Mike McQuarrie, the graduate assistant who's in his late 20s, sees Jerry Sandusky, a guy in his late 50s on a Friday night in the Penn State football offices, in a shower with a young boy, it was traumatic enough for him to have, spoken to his father, and then he goes to Joe Paterno. I don't, whatever he said beyond, a man in his late 50s in a shower on a Friday night with a 10-year-old boy, I'm not sure what else you could say that wouldn't prompt, somebody going, I have to go to the proper legal authorities. This isn't a matter you keep internal. I mean, it's just too important and too significant. And I think beyond that, all of the things that happened in the wake of that are just, the only word that comes to my mind is tragic.
A lot of this centers around Joe Paterno, who is a central figure in this. And I mean, you look back and over 60 years he's been at Penn State, most wins as a head coach in major college football. It's, A lot of people are calling for his resignation. Is he done either this week against Nebraska or before coaching against Nebraska, or is he done at the end of the year?
I think whether he's done, in a couple of days or in a couple of weeks, I think he's definitely done. I mean, the handling of this is inexcusable, and not just from Joe Paterno, the president of Penn State, Graham Spanier, who is, on the chair of the NCAA Oversight Committee with the BCS. It's disgraceful how Graham Spanier handled this too. I mean, his statement of unconditional support when his athletic director and another Penn State executive are up for perjury is just, so disturbing, and it's so disgraceful that these men do not see what was really on the line here and how you can go forward from that without any explanation or when it's mounting. I mean, this is just, I keep, it's disgraceful. And I don't know what the future will be for Penn State football. But there needs to be people not only losing jobs, but I think there needs to be, legal ramifications for a lot of people beyond just Jerry Sandusky. Because there, if you knew about this and you didn't do anything about it or didn't do enough, and you knew he was still around your program dating back to just, this past year after God knows how many years of this, I mean, there's a lot of people there who should be ashamed of themselves.
An involving story. You can catch up with the latest on CBSSports.com, and we don't want to make light of anything on there. Go on the site, read about the details, because it is a troubling story, to say the least, out of Happy Valley. Did want to move a little bit and look forward to this upcoming week. There's a big matchup that I'm going to head up to Palo Alto for, and that's Oregon and Stanford, kind of the de facto game of the century west of the Rockies, and easily the game in the Pac-12 this year. What are your early thoughts on this game, as it's really Andrew Luck versus speed, speed, speed of the Ducks?
I'm curious how that Stanford defense is going to hold up against all that speed that Chip Kelly has, and it's a team that's gotten a little healthier. And the game last year up in Eugene where Stanford got out to a fast start and then just kind of got overwhelmed by that speed. Now, I do think that as banged up as Stanford is, especially with some of their tight ends now, it's still Andrew Luck. I think he's going to light up the scoreboard here. It's a home game. I think they're the more physical team, but I am curious to see this defense that the Cardinal has, which had played very well in the first half of the year and started to get, you saw some cracks. I mean, you saw Chris Polk, who's a great running back, first Steve Sarkisian ran all over them early, and then you saw what USC did to them. Now let's see where they go beyond that. I think Stanford can come out of there with a win, but I'm not 100%, or I'm not even close to it, just because the Ducks have so much firepower.
I was thinking all year that this was Stanford's game to lose, and I thought, especially as they got out to a pretty good start and were just blowing opponents away, that they would definitely win this one at home against a Ducks team that, let's face it's not as good as they were last year when they went to the national title game, especially on defense. But that being said, both teams are second half teams. Stanford is gotten, had some close games. I mean, they were within a couple points of Washington State last week against Oregon State. They were within a couple points and then just blew them out in the second half. Oregon, with their speed, has worn opponents down, with the pace in the second half. Is this something you only want to tune into in the second half, or could this be a close game throughout?
No, I think it's definitely going to be interesting to see where this starts out. I mean, this is going to be a great stylistic matchup. Because you have one really physical team and one fast team, really fast team but the fast team likes to run it and they're really good at that. Anytime it's hard to say a team that runs the ball for as much as they do isn't quote unquote a physical team. I mean, it's going to be very exciting.
Absolutely, and you can catch it on Saturday. Plenty more to talk about, but let's bring in our guest, someone who just faced Oregon and Stanford and knows both teams well, and a good friend of ours from his days at USC when we were out at practice.
We're excited to have Steve Sarkisian, the coach of the Washington Huskies, join us. So I got to ask, if you said this, if you were coaching a team and had the first pick in the draft, you'd really take Matt Barkley over Andrew Luck, or were you just try and encourage the USC quarterback to leave your former program a year early.
Well, I want to start with this. One, this is by no means a knock on Andrew Luck. He's obviously a tremendous quarterback, playing at a high level. What he's done at Stanford and the accolades he's been getting, he deserves mightily. What I do know about Matt Barkley is the system that he plays in. I know him personally from the time of recruiting him from the ninth grade on at Modern Day High School. And the way he's matured and played at the level he's playing at and the types of things he's been asked to do for me and for our system, for what I would do, I would draft Matt Barkley. And that, again, that's not a knock for Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck will probably be the first pick in the draft. But for what we do, I think Matt fits a little bit better.
Steve, you obviously know USC head coach Lane Kiffin very well. You served together under Pete Carroll down at USC. What's it like this week going against someone who you consider a friend? How different is it this week versus other games?
Well, I think the biggest difference is, you know, the preparation process, how guys like to prepare and different things. And so you try to fight the urge of paralysis by analysis, where you try to, you know, overthink things and go with what you believe in and what you know. But it's always fun to compete against your friends. And I respect Lane so much. He's a tremendous coach, a great football mind. He's got a tremendous staff. And I think Lane's done a great job of holding that thing together when it could have easily gone astray there when the sanctions came down. And a credit to Lane and his staff for holding it together, doing a great job.
Well, you have a great young quarterback there in Keith Price, and he got off to, you know, a terrific start this year. He's tailed off a little bit of late, but so how do you coach a guy with the playmaking skills that he has? I know you once compared him to a young Charlie Ward. So how do you coach a guy like that, you know, to still make plays, yet at the same time you're trying to keep him within the system? Where is the balance in that for you?
Well, I think it's exactly that, you know, that you try to fight for the balance within it. You know, I don't want to take Keith Stinger away for his playmaking ability. That's one of the unique things to his game. But there is a fine line when you're trying too hard and allowing the system to work, to play within the system. And fortunately for Keith, he's made plays both ways this year, right within the system, getting the primary as well as secondary reads. And then he's made plays buying time with his feet and making plays down the field as well. So there's a fine line there. And hopefully as the plays arise that aren't so good one way or the other, we can coach to them and he can register them and he can kind of log them back in the back of his mind and carry them with him as he moves forward to learn from some of the mistakes and some of the great plays that he makes along the way.
Your defensive coordinator, Nick Holt, who served with you at USC and you brought up to Washington, made some waves earlier this week with his comments saying he'd rather face USC than an Oregon. Would you offensively rather, you know, see someone that you're familiar with, or do you like kind of going up against, you know, varying styles of defenses around the Pac-12?
Well, I'd say this to go back to Nick's comment, because I think this is important. I think you could poll just about every defensive coordinator in our conference and they'll say the same thing. The reality of it is what Oregon does is unique compared to most people. The speed at which they play, the tempo at which they play is not common to what they do. That's not a knock against USC. They're a tremendous offensive football team. And so the question was, who would you rather prepare for, not who would you rather play against? And so I think that's key to get that point across. For me, the challenge of preparing is always the fun part of the game, and that's one of the reasons why we coach. And whether it's going against an Arizona State who plays a couple of defenses, or going up against a Monty Kiffin who week in and week out is one of the best minds in football, that can bring new things to attack what you do offensively, that those are the challenges, and that's why we love what we do.
Just given the nature of the Pac-12 as it's kind of emerging here, you've been up at Washington for a while, had a ton of success in relatively a short period of time, and now USC's still going to be dealing with the scholarship sanctions, and you know who knows what's going to happen with the Oregon investigation. And how close do you feel like UW is to emerging as maybe the dominant program in this league?
Well, I think we're getting better. You know, obviously we've improved, you know, from 5 wins in year one to 7 wins in year two, and sitting at 6-3 right now in year three. And you try to look for markers along the way, and you try to look and see what other programs we've had to rebuild and what they've done. And, you know, I look at Coach Harbaugh's first 3 years at Stanford, they had won 17 games, you know, and we're sitting at 18 wins so far in 3 seasons. So I feel like we're on the right path. How long that takes, I don't know. You know, that's recruiting, that's developing, you know, the leadership needed, that's evolving scheme-wise. But I do feel like we're on the right track and we're getting better.
One of the you played last week the final game at Husky Stadium before a $250 million renovation. Real quick, what's your favorite memory from your past couple years at Husky Stadium, and how will the renovation help your program going forward to, reach that next level?
Well, we've had some great moments in Husky Stadium. Probably the biggest one is beating SC in my first year here. They were number three in the country. I just left there, and Pete was on the opposite sidelines, who was a great mentor to me for many years. And for us to get that win as a program, I think signified that change is on the way. We obviously aren't there yet, but that change is on the way. And it allowed our players to have hope and to continue to buy into what we were doing. The new stadium is just going to be fantastic. It'll be state of the art, and from a recruiting standpoint, the facilities, things of that nature, will be second to none. From an efficiency standpoint, for a football operations perspective, it'll be tremendous. And then to match that with the setting of Montlake and Lake Washington in the background, it's just, I don't think there's any better place in college football.
All right, Sark, the last thing we got for you is you've obviously had a lot of success in a short period of time there, especially taking over a program that was in a really bad place. What's the biggest thing you think you've learned about being a head coach that you just wouldn't have known until you're actually in the job, doing the job on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I've learned a lot. I wish I could just say it's one thing that man, that's the biggest thing I've learned so far. But there are a few things, and I think a few of them for me are one, controlling your emotions from a day-to-day basis. This thing's a grind, and when you're the head coach, so many things come across your desk that you can't get caught up in one or two or three of them. You just got to handle them one at a time and do it diligently. And with that being said, time management is critical. You've got to find a way to manage your time. If you're going to be an offensive or a defensive play caller as well as the head coach, your time management is big. And then thirdly, not micromanage your staff. You hired your staff for a reason because they're good coaches. Allow them to do their thing, and that'll take some of the pressures off of yourself.
All right. Well, it's been great visiting with you, and we wish you the best of luck the rest of the season and continue building that thing.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Dark.